leaves us free to do a station identification. AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero Tucson, The Voice. Stay tuned for America Armed and Free.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Texarkana, Arkansas. About 7:30 a.m. on February 4th, a 15-year-old boy walked into the airport with an AR-style rifle, chambered a round, and demanded an aircraft. The staff then fled to a back room and locked themselves in. The youth then proceeded to the airfield to plane jack one himself. A private pilot on the tarmac saw what was happening, retrieved his own firearm from his truck, and confronted the 15-year-old, according to officials. The pilot ordered the young man to the pavement, and he complied. The teen was then taken into custody by the Texarkana police, who issued a statement applauding the heroic act by the local pilot, saying the fact that the incident was resolved quickly and peacefully, despite the extreme danger presented, is highly commendable, according to a department spokesman. This has been the Defensive Gun Use, or DGU, Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America Armed and Free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free, both in uniform and not, as I have not been. Some of you know that yesterday, President Trump wrote an executive or signed an executive order protecting Second Amendment rights. And I thought that probably no one's had much time to go through it, and it would be a good idea to read it on air and comment on it as to what it might mean, because there's some very specific things in it that may have an effect, in fact, most certainly will have an effect, on how the business of dealing with firearms in the United States is conducted by government. Pardon me. And I think that it's, by the way, this is an open hour. Anybody wants to call in on any related topic, if you want to talk about earlier the difference on when you, between when you can use force on another human being and when you can't, when you can use deadly force on another human being and when you can't, if you want to discuss any of those topics in a calm and rational way from someone who's been certified to teach it for more than 30 years now, if you want to do that, you're welcome to do it in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios at 520-790-2040. And even if it's a little off topic, as long as it's in the vein of the purpose of this program to discuss right to keep and bear arms topics and the gadgetry thereof. And so anything that's along those lines, even if it's about multi-tools or something like that, or a particular type of firearm, even if it's a little off the topic, I'm happy to entertain it because this is an interactive hour. And I do encourage people to call at 520-790-2040. This is dated February 7th, so it's 2 days ago now, and it's an executive order and it reads as follows. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, it is hereby ordered, Section 1, purpose. The Second Amendment is an indispensable safeguard of security and liberty. It has preserved the right of the American people to protect ourselves, our families, and our freedoms since the founding of our great nation. Because it is foundational to making all other rights held by Americans, the right to keep and bear arms must not be infringed. Okay, number one, you have the highest office in the land reinforcing the idea that the Second Amendment is an enumerated specific right and that it must not be infringed. Bully for him. That is fantastic to have the President of the United States say that part out loud. Section 2, Plan of Action. A. Within 30 days of the date of this order, the Attorney General shall examine all orders, regulations, guidance, plans, international agreements, and the other actions of executive departments and agencies to assess any ongoing infringements of the Second Amendment rights of our citizens and present a proposed plan of action to the President through the Domestic Policy Advisor to protect the Second Amendment rights of all Americans. Let us deconstruct that paragraph. Plan of action. Okay. The Attorney General shall examine all orders, in other words, executive orders. There's a number of anti-freedom executive orders by the Biden administration, which he will cancel. That's what that means. Regulations. Regulations have been put out by ATF, which has no authority to put out to reinterpret regulations. They can put out regulations as to how the law will be enforced, but they have no power to put out regulations that change the way the law is enforced, that alter what the law is. And that's exactly what Cargill versus Garland was about. Some of you may remember that I interviewed Michael Cargill in the wake of that Supreme Court decision where he won on bump stocks, which said that the ATF had no authority or had exceeded its authority under the color of law to regulate bump stocks. If Congress wants to regulate them, they need to write their own laws, but the ATF cannot write regulations that have the effect of law and then penalize people for it. So that's regulations. Guidance. And by guidance, he means guidance to executive branch agencies like the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives as to how they will enforce laws. There have been a number of guidances to ATF and to other government organizations as to how they're going to enforce federal law, which don't comport with the Second Amendment, and they're going to find it out and have some alterations of that. Plans, international agreements. That is crucial. International agreements, because of the arms treaty, the international arms treaty that the Biden administration signed onto, but has not been ratified by the Senate and never will be. And what he's going to do is rescind the U.S. participation in the international arms treaty, because basically it would require gun registration down to the individual level to be reported to the United Nations. It is egregiously unconstitutional and violative of the Second Amendment and the principles of individual liberty, and he's going to cancel it. That's what he means by putting international agreements in the executive order. And other actions of executive departments and agencies to assess any ongoing infringements of the Second Amendment rights of our citizens. ATF has been, for instance, trying to collect FRT triggers. FRT triggers are free reset triggers. Somebody remind me, FRT with the F and FRT. Full reset triggers? No. Anyway, what an FRT trigger is when you press on the trigger, it fires the gun once, and when you release the trigger, it fires the gun the second time. And the reason it's not a machine gun, it makes the gun fire faster, because for every pull of the trigger, when you release it, it fires another shot, but it requires releasing the trigger. And if you were to put the gun on safe while the trigger was back, it wouldn't fire the next shot. As a result, it is not a machine gun because it requires an action of the trigger to fire the gun for each and every shot, one by pressing in and one by letting up. Well, the ATF has taken the position that that's a machine gun, an FRT trigger, and they've been going door to door and confiscating them. Well, they don't have the authority to do that based on Cargill versus Garland. And so what this executive order is going to say is no, the ATF cannot exceed its authority under the color of law and do that. And that's what this executive order is going to call them back from doing. And so that's section two. Let's see, how are we doing on time? We're fine. And I need to take a drink of water and be right with you guys. Maybe if I get the bottle open. Section 2B, in developing such proposed plan of action, the Attorney General shall review at a minimum, 1, all presidential agencies. America Armed and Free, your first name, please.
It's Chris again.
Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Charles, I would like to say that I was listening earlier to the CBS Weekend Update, and it made my day because I heard an FBI agent who is being investigated for violating some of the constitutional rights of some of the J6 people is losing sleep because he is being investigated. And then the host asked him how he felt about filling out the questionnaire about it, and he almost cried. And I hope that in the future the FBI is made of sterner stock and that they follow the Constitution. And that is my comment.
I fully support the right of anybody who works in government to have any feelings they want and to not have it affect their job. To the phones. Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, Charles, the article you're reading from and just the entire conversation over the last few weeks, it's in some ways startling that the executive order has to tell government officials that your first responsibility is protecting the rights of citizens. I know it didn't exactly say that, but that was the clear implication of
it. Actually did.
What was basically being said.
No, it actually did say that.
Okay. The other part of it is, if I were to take out my magic wand and say to society writ large in this country that the next 4 years can do, it can. Number one, the number of people on the more leftist government is the answer to all of life's problems, contingent of the population. The number of them that are scrambling to actually quote from the Constitution on the powers of, say, the presidency versus the powers of the legislature is amusing and educational at the same time. But if I were to wave my magic wand and want something truly to come about in the next 4 years, it is to re-educate the wider populace on what it is your, not just your rights, but your responsibilities in this country are. You know, go back to Civics 101. It's a chronic a concern of mine. But I think it speaks to the larger issue of, there seems to be this genuine lack of common sense and understanding of simple, basic realities of life that has plagued our population, our culture, for a very long time. And if nothing else, perhaps what these next weeks and months and years is going to bring about is the re-education and the reaffirmation of those basic principles, you know, be it constitutional framed, be it just common sense things of like the old book of from 30, 40 years ago, Everything I Need to Know in Life I Learned in Kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Those lessons you learned in the sandbox, they apply in the rest of your life, whether you want to admit it or not.
You know, there's also an important case that is coming up through the Fifth Circuit right now, which is called Potter versus Hogwarts. And it's to whether or not the essential question is a magic wand a weapon that's protected by the Second Amendment?
Amen. Amen.
Okay, Bill. You forced me to hit.
We're both going to be in giggling fits here. Okay. Thank you, sir.
You forced me. You forced me into my seriousness limit, Bill. I got to tell you, you have that effect on me. All right. You have a great day.
This is Herman Cain, and if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Dawn Wells, is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the Swap Shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
Hi, Mark Levin here. America Armed and Free. Sounds like a good title for a book. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
It's your right, your responsibility, defending life, defending liberty from kings and tyrants, murderers and thieves. So spread the word till all have heard. One guarantee will keep us free. They put quill in the parchment so we'd understand. Keep the power in the people's hands.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
And indeed, it shall not. And we're discussing an executive order that President Trump has just issued regarding infringements on the Second Amendment. And continuing on, let's see. One, all presidential agencies and actions from January 2021 through January 2025 that purport to promote safety but may have impinged on the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. Two, rules promulgated by the Department of Justice, including by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, from January 2021 through January 2025, pertaining to firearms and or firearms licensees. What that has to do with is the Biden administration came down very, very hard on paperwork violations. Like, say, for instance, someone was filling out a 4473 form to buy a firearm at a dealer. And they put down, it says your address, and then it says county. And instead of county, you put country, where you were originally from, if you're a naturalized citizen. Or you left county blank, and the organization didn't catch the error. They're counting those violations as being willful as opposed to being mistakes. And it cost a lot of people in the firearms business, like Red's Gun Store, a huge gun store in Wyoming. And they put them out of business because of some paperwork violations. Nothing willful, nothing criminal, simple paperwork violations. And they took away their guy's dealer's license. Things like that. That's what he's going to be looking at. Okay. Rules promulgated by the Department of Justice, including the Bureau of... Oh, I just read that. Another thing they're going to look at is the bump stock rule. ATF is still trying to enforce the bump stock rule as if Cargill versus Garland didn't happen. They're still trying to enforce it. They're still going after FRT triggers. They're still full reset trigger. That's what it stands for. They're still going after any number of other gadgetry that make a firearm more useful because they say it makes it fire faster. And somehow there's some boogeyman about guns that fire quickly. Furthermore, one of the circuits just declared that the regulation against having a machine gun is unconstitutional. I don't know how far that one's going to go. That's at the circuit court level. We'll see if they appeal it or if the Supremes decide they want to take that. Frankly, I think the Second Amendment does include machine guns, although that does not mean they cannot be regulated. And so what I'd love to see is the whole National Firearms Act of 1934 just done away with, which then means there's no regulation whatsoever on machine guns, suppressors. They'd be treated like ordinary other firearms. And the prices of them, most of them would come down, although Thompson's will still be very valuable because I don't think they're made anymore. All right, back to this. Agencies' plans, orders, and actions regarding so-called enhanced regulatory enforcement policy pertaining to firearms and other federal firearms licensees. What that refers to is, and also reports and related documents issued by the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. First of all, that office has been closed. It's been shuttered. So hallelujah. That all it is it was an office for anti-rights organizations to work out of, like Brady and other organizations. That's all it was, is a planning office for them. But agencies' plans, orders, and actions regarding so-called enhanced regulatory enforcement policy. What that means is if you sell one gun, you're considered a dealer, and if you don't have a dealer's license, you can be prosecuted for being a dealer without a license, which is ridiculous. You heard on Swap Shop, a guy called in, he has his father-in-law's gun collection, he's liquidating it. That's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. It's an absolutely legitimate thing to do. It has always been exempt. For instance, you cannot legally, since 1968 in the United States, you can't legally ship a gun from you to another private party in the United States across a state line. That's been state law, that's been federal law since 1968. You have to go through a dealer. Now, the exceptions to that are if you have a fiduciary relationship, like let's say someone declares bankruptcy and you're the lawyer who is liquidating the estate, you're exempt from that. You can ship those guns across state lines. Let's say it's by inheritance. Let's say a man passes away. He lived in Illinois. His son lives in Arizona. The executor of the estate can ship the gun to the man in Illinois because it's part of an estate. It is not a violation of 18 U.S. Code. I forget what part of it, 9-something, 18 U.S. Code, 922, some subsection below that. But it's not a violation. Those are exempted activities. Now, if you just decide you want to sell your gun to your brother in New Mexico, you cannot legally drive to New Mexico and deliver a gun to him. You got to go through a dealer. That's been federal law since 1968. But if you die and will your gun to your brother, the executor of your estate can ship it to your brother in New Mexico. That's an example of some of the ways they've been. So what they've been saying is if you sell one gun, you're a dealer. Well, that's ridiculous. There's people all the time that sell off their collections. There's a guy named Gary who calls the Swap Shop. He's reducing his collection significantly and using it as part of his retirement. There is nothing illegal, immoral, or wrong about that. But the previous administration has been considering that as gun dealership, as being a gun dealer. And it's just plain nuts. There's no criminal intent there. And you gotta have criminal intent to have a violation of the law unless you have an administration that persecutes rather than prosecutes. All right, back to this. Reports related, I'm reading from an executive order by President Trump related to Second Amendment preservation. Reports and related documents issued by the White House Office of Gun Prevention. 5. The positions taken by the United States in any and all ongoing and potential litigation that affects or could affect the ability of Americans to exercise their Second Amendment rights. That is pivotal. And here is why. There are currently approximately 66 cases making their way towards the Supreme Court. Not all of them will be granted certiorari, all right, the rule of four, that the four justices have to vote to take the case. But many of them are cases where there is a circuit split. What a circuit split means is when one circuit court, like say the Ninth Circuit Court, which is in California, has a different answer to whether or not something is constitutional than say the Fifth Circuit out of Louisiana, all right, or the Second Circuit out of D.C. whatever it happens to be, if there's two separate circuits of the court system in the United States that come to a different conclusion on the same law, it doesn't guarantee, but it usually indicates that the Supreme Court will at some point take it up, because they have to resolve circuit splits. You can't have a legal system in the United States where something is constitutional in one section of the country and unconstitutional in another. That simply does not work. That violates federalism. All right. The idea that states have sovereignty to do certain things, and that the federal government is going to be a police agency for civil rights to make sure that no state infringes the civil right of the individual. That happened through the 14th Amendment. Some conservatives argue that that isn't constitutional. It is. They need to read the 14th Amendment. What I'm saying is that the U.S. has taken the position in quite a few of these cases that something is not allowable, that is absolutely a violation of the Second Amendment. And what Trump is saying here is that the Solicitor General of the United States, who argues cases for the United States in the Supreme Court, is now going to be looking from a right to keep and bear arms perspective on their cases. And a lot of these cases where basically the Solicitor General, that the government's lawyer in front of the Supreme Court, was arguing against the rights of people, is now going to reverse that position and argue in favor of the rights of people. And it's going to be very difficult for the Supreme Court under those circumstances to rule against the rights of people. That is pivotal, and it's very important. And you guys, you need to read this executive order. I don't know what order number it is, but it's real easy to find on the internet. Read it and absorb it. I'm going to read it again. The positions taken by the United States in any and all ongoing potential litigation that affects or could affect the ability of Americans to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Six, agencies' classifications of firearms and ammunition. In other words, classifications of, say, what is a short-barreled rifle? What is a suppressor? What is a silencer, if you will? What is a short-barreled shotgun? What is an other, an AOW, and any other weapon? Generally speaking, for example, rifles have to have a barrel of at least 16 inches, and if it's got a shoulder stock, and an overall length of 26 inches. There are certain exemptions to that rule, but generally speaking, if you have a rifle with a shoulder stock and it has a barrel of less than 16 inches, generally speaking, that's called a short-barreled rifle or SBR, and you've got to get a tax stamp for it. It's not illegal, but you have to go through the process, same as you would of buying a machine gun, which is still perfectly legal to do. You can't buy new ones made after 1986, but it's still perfectly legal to buy a machine gun. And the process is the same as registering a short-barreled rifle. You file a form with the ATF. If you're going to cut it down, if you're going to make a barrel shorter, you're going to put a shorter barrel on it. You file a Form 1 with the ATF. You pay the $200 transfer tax. You send them your fingerprint and your file photos. They run a background check and come back. Lately, they've been coming back lightning fast with these, and they send you a tax stamp. The tax stamp looks like the stamp on a liquor bottle because it's the same exact thing from the same exact agency, except it's glued to a piece of paper that has your picture, your signature, and your address on it, and it is the authorization that you've paid the tax on the gun, and because you've paid the tax, it is legal to have a short-barreled rifle if you go through that process. That's the way it works, and they're going to look at the classifications. My guess is they're going to take suppressors and short-barreled rifles out of the NFA and just treat them as ordinary firearms, and hallelujah if they do that. I really hope they will, because why regulate that? With pistol brace guns now, it's the same damn thing as a short-barreled rifle.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and white.
It's freedom's way you're trying to change. You lost your mind, it's clear you've gone insane. Let me give it straight, don't try and take my guns away. You best stay put and don't come near me. try and take my guns away.
All right, covering President Trump's recent 2725 executive order on the Second Amendment. Item number seven, the processing, eight, they're going to review everything, including seven, the processing of applications to make, manufacture, transfer, or export firearms. The reason that's important is the Biden administration really put a cork in firearms exports. It really screwed up the industry's ability to do international, legitimate international business in firearms. And all these things were an effort to constrict the firearms industry and shrink it by basically treating it like a hemorrhoid. And that doesn't comport with the Second Amendment. And they're going to review the policy and they're going to come up with some intelligent answer to change it. Section 3, implementation. Upon submission of the proposed plan of action described in Section 2 of this order, the Attorney General shall work with the Domestic Policy Advisor to finalize the plan of action and establish a process for implementation. Section 4, General Provisions. A. Nothing in this order shall be construed to impair or otherwise affect 1. The authority. By the way, folks, if you want to call in, you can interrupt at any time at 520-790-2040. Nothing in this order shall be construed to impair or otherwise affect 1. The authority granted by law to an executive department agency or head thereof. 2. The functions of the Director of Office and Management and Budget related to budgetary, administrative, or legislative proposals. B. This order shall be implemented consistent with applicable federal law and subject to the availability of appropriations. In other words, what he's saying in that is that he's going to follow the, this is a directive on how you will do it by following the law and by not spending money we don't have. And that is often an objection to an executive order or a law. Where are we going to get the money for it? And what he's saying here is we're not going to do anything we don't have the money for. We're not going to start any new programs that aren't funded. B, this order shall be implemented consistent with all... Oh, I already read that. C, this order is not intended to and does not create any right or benefit, substantive or procedural, enforceable at law or in equity, in other words, criminally or civilly, by any party against the United States, its departments, agencies, or entities, its officers, employees, or agents, or any other person. Now, here's an analysis of what I just read to you by a severely anti-freedom organization called The Trace. The Trace is a Bloomberg-funded publication that is virulently anti-rights that masquerades as journalism. The Trace says, quote, President Donald Trump issued an executive order on February 7th in an apparent step toward fulfilling his campaign promises to roll back 4 years of gun reforms under his predecessor. Well, that's the executive order I just read to you. On the chopping block, emphasis mine, on the chopping block are several high-profile attempts by former President Joe Biden to reduce gun violence, including regulations on ghost guns. Okay, so-called ghost guns. A ghost gun is a gun that's built from a kit, sold legitimately, and the kit is not a finished gun. These are called 80% receivers. What it is a block of aluminum or a block of polymer, and it's not, you couldn't put a magazine in it. It doesn't have the hole drilled all the way through it. And it doesn't have all the holes necessary to put in the safeties and the slide stops and things like that. They sell it with a jig, and you have to use a drill and very carefully drill those things out and mill out the inside of the gun, and generally done with computerized machinery, but it could be done with ordinary power tools if you're very, very careful about the way you do it. The point of the matter being is these are unfinished firearm kits. We have a tradition since well before the United States was a country of people manufacturing their own, blacksmithing their own guns. And it is a long, long tradition. Look up the Kentucky long rifle and the Tennessee long rifle. Look up these guns that are historically famous, guns that helped win the Revolutionary War, that were manufactured by people, by individuals, muskets mostly, not rifled barrels. But the point is, we have a tradition of gun making in the United States that predates this country. Calling it a, the reason they call it a ghost gun is because the kit has no serial number on it. And so as long, it's not illegal to have a gun with no serial number, provided the serial, it didn't have one that was removed. That's called defacing a gun. That's illegal. But if it's manufactured without a serial number, like many guns were before 1968, especially single-shot 22 rifles that you could buy at Montgomery Ward's, a lot of those did not have serial numbers. They were made by various companies, Mossberg, Remington, that were made without serial numbers because it was pre-1968. The law didn't require it. The 1968 Omnibus Gun and Crime Control Act that President Nixon signed into law forced there to be a serial number on every modern firearm. But before that, they weren't required, and some guns didn't have it. Certainly, the muskets of the Revolutionary War, generally speaking, did not have serial numbers on them, generally speaking. Some guns did, but most did not. The higher-end guns made by expensive gun makers may or may not have had some unique marking to individual guns, but most did not. Anyway, a ghost gun is a gun made from a kit. America Armed and Free, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Charles, I had a question.
Yeah.
So I could pretty much buy a Tommy gun and get a tax stamp on it and be legal?
If the gun was made before April 19th, 1986, yes.
And, I'm talking back in the roaring 20s.
Well, like, in the roaring until 19...
I get a piece of the action.
I really like Fizbin, but only on Tuesdays when the wind is from the southeast. The point is, though, you could go into Ace Hardware in 1925 and buy a Thompson.
That's awesome.
And would that it were so again. I'm sure that Findus Hardware would sell them. They sell ammunition and knives, quite a large selection of ammo and knives. But after 1968, most of the restrictions on getting a federal firearms license were such that most hardware stores wouldn't do it. You know who used to be a big-time gun dealer before then?
Western Flyer?
Probably them, but Miller's Surplus used to sell all kinds of guns. They used to have racks. They're still a great place. Mr. Sloan still owns it and runs it. But Don Sloan used to sell a whole bunch because he was a World War II veteran. He used to sell all kinds of World War II surplus M1s and carbines and all kinds of stuff that after 68 they had to be licensed and you had to go through a bunch of rigmarole. And it just wasn't worth it anymore, so they quit selling guns.
Now, Charles, could you imagine Starfleet if they practiced phaser control? We would have been sitting ducks for the Romulans.
Well, I suppose we would have, but if you look at the planet of international peace where all weapons are banned, people had guns that shot rocks.
All right. God bless you, Charles.
You too. And that opens up a line for you in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios, brings us to our third break, and we're going to take that, and then I'm going to finish reading this article from The Trace, analyzing what I just read you from the Trump administration, the executive order.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
This is Caroline.
Happy chickens.
We have a 5-acre horse property for sale.
They're participating in the program.
Please make that part of the package.
A ranch with chickens. They might call that the chicken ranch.
I've been called worse.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop! Stop!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. JPFO.org.
The bastard tried to rob me. He's dead and I'm alive.
He tried to pull a knife on me. I pulled my 45. All cops did was take my gun and drag me off to jail. No cops were there to help me live, but now I'm out on bail. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. I'd rather live than die. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. Let some other mama cry. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
And indeed, and in response to Christopher, here's this. Let's see. I don't hear anything. There we go.
In Starfleet, you must know many different languages. Klingon is very important. Today is a good day to die. Ja, huch, nik, kach, jas, vach.
There you go. I had it memorized at one point. I don't anymore, and I don't want to mispronounce it. All right, back to the analysis of President Trump's executive order by the Trace, which is a virulently anti-freedom organization masquerading as a journalistic organization. On the chopping block are several high-profile attempts by former President Biden to reduce gun violence, including regulations on ghost guns, expanded background checks and on gun sales, and tougher regulatory oversight of law-breaking gun dealers. America Armed and Free, your first name, please.
Mark.
You're on the air.
Yes, Charles. Earlier you spoke of reparations. And
yeah.
I don't know what this is going to be, what you're going to be reading about here, but for those gun dealers who have been severely harmed by Clinton Dumbo Obama Bidenistas, I would like to see them apply for reparations and get them.
Yeah, the executive order specifically prohibits that. And that's not what they're trying to achieve. They're trying to get to a place of freedom, not a place of retribution. Okay, Mark?
All right, thanks.
You're welcome. The executive order directs Attorney General Pam Bondi to conduct a review within 30 days to assess any ongoing infringements of the Second Amendment rights of our citizens. After that, Bondi is expected to present a plan to undo any policies the administration believes violate gun rights. I object to the term gun rights, whether gun people or anti-gun people use them. We should talk about civil rights. We should talk about human rights, because guns are inanimate objects. They don't have rights. But I digress, and maybe I'm being too picky. Trump lists 7 categories for the attorney general to review. The first is wide-ranging and includes all of Biden's executive actions, as well as any gun-related action he directed agencies to take under his watch. The remaining categories lay out a laundry list of Biden administration policies that drew ire from the gun rights advocates. Kudos to the Trace, who usually doesn't say it right. And when they say gun rights advocates, they're not saying from the manufacturers or something like that. They're actually accurately describing who it is that objects, that drew ire from gun rights advocates, including the National Rifle Association, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, the Gun Industry Trade Group. Quote, promises made to law-abiding gun owners are being kept by President Donald J. Trump. Unquote, Doug Hamlin, the NRA's executive vice president and CEO, said in a statement, quote, NRA members were instrumental turning out in record numbers to secure his victory, and he is proving worthy of their votes, faith, and confidence in his first days in office, unquote. Gun reform advocates who have been bracing for Trump to turn his eye toward gun issues, gun reform advocates, gun banners, who have been bracing for Trump to turn his eye toward gun issues since his inauguration, immediately criticized the executive order. Mark Collins, the national policy advisor for the Gun Reform Group Brady, said that if the attorney general's review is objective, her findings would support the policy's constitutionality. Well, if you're objective, don't you have to look first and see? If you're truly going to be objective, don't you have to look at the policy and rationally construe the policy in light of the Second Amendment, especially since the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin decision? Don't you have to look at it in the context through which the lens through which the Supreme Court has put forth? You have to review it. Quote, they were perfectly in line with Second Amendment rights and were hoping that at the end of this review, there might be some restraint and objectivity, Collins said. Quote, maybe they're planning to roll back everything, which is really a bad idea, especially considering that we just went through the sharpest drop in gun homicides in modern American history. Yeah, what happened that preceded that, sir? It seems wild that you would roll back all the policies that made that possible. Garbanzo beans. What caused the spike in violence was failure to enforce the laws with the BLM riots, and basically since Ferguson, what's called the Ferguson effect when riots happen. For God's sakes, if you stop enforcing the law, you got to expect that violence is going to increase. Holy moly. These people should get their heads out of their colons. All right, back to the article. During the Biden administration, the gun industry took particular issue with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives' so-called zero-tolerance policy of enhanced regulatory enforcement, which Trump ordered reviewed. Under the policy, the ATF sought to revoke the licenses of gun dealers that committed serious regulatory violations like selling guns without background checks or falsifying records. Let me tell you something. The Brady Act of 1994 makes it very, very clear that if you are buying a gun from a dealer that is a modern gun made after 1898, you have to go through a background check. The only exception to that is people with a CCW permit, because they've already had their background check. And if a dealer is selling guns without doing the background check, they're in serious violation of the law. The problem is not the administration or ATF going after dealers that aren't following the law. The problem is ATF were actually going after dealers who used the wrong color ink on a 4473 form, or left out the county, or instead of, or the person put their address in the name box or something like that. A simple paperwork error, and treating it as if it were a criminal violation. That's what Trump is reviewing. And the people here at the Trace are being manifestly dishonest by claiming that what they're going after is bad dealers. The charge led to record numbers of revocations, but the policy was relaxed in 2024 after a court challenge. And the reason was because there was no intent to commit any crime by some people that just didn't catch it when someone put their county in the wrong box, or they put their name on the address line, or vice versa. That's what was appealed, and that's why the policy was lightened, because they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. The review will also include the Biden administration's crackdown on ghost guns, untraceable firearms that can be assembled at home from kits purchased without background checks. Okay, background check is a fraud. There is nothing a background check does to keep dishonest people from getting guns. Dishonest people will not go through the background check. Honest people will. And the effect that has is the effect of putting all transactions on paper, which is the net result that the anti-freedom bigots are attempting to accomplish. To the extent that there is a trade, a private trade in firearms from one person to another, that can never, ever be overcome without door-to-door raids of every house in the United States. The fact that there is a trade in firearms that is private and legitimate is what makes it so that the government doesn't control all the guns. Based on what you've seen revealed by DOGE, of just in one agency alone, USAID, some of the programs that we're funding that they're attempting to make unaccountable, even to Congress, which regulates them, would any one of you in this audience trust government to maintain a registry of firearms? Is there anybody out there that can present a legitimate argument to me of why a government registry of firearms makes anyone more safe? I'd be willing to entertain and let you finish your sentences. I'll do a whole hour on the radio with you if you can present an argument to me, to this audience, as to how the writing down of the names and serial numbers of people and their guns can make the society any more safe. If you can present any argument whatsoever, even if it's unreasonable, I'll listen to it. This audience will listen to it, and we'll judge the validity of your point based on your logic and reason. Back to the article here. The review will also include the Biden administration's crackdown on ghost guns. Okay. For God's sakes, firearms made from kits are such a minuscule, it's less than a quarter of a percent of all the guns that are made in the United States. It is nothing. And even if it was half of the guns, so what? You can't legally sell that gun. You can possess it yourself, but you can't legally sell a gun without a serial number. Right? So that means if you build a gun that's designed for you for it to be private, it's your gun, but you can't legally then sell that gun to anyone. In order to sell the gun, it does have to be identifiable. Right? You can't do that. That's being an unlicensed gun dealer. If you make guns that are blank of serial number and sell them to other people, that's called being an unlicensed dealer, and that's not legal. Okay? I'm not commenting on whether that's a good or a bad idea. I'm just telling you it's not legal, and it can't be legally done, and you shouldn't break the law. This program is dedicated to the notion that government forever remains servant, not master. But in order for government not to give government a reason to exceed its authority, you have to obey the rules. You will never hear this program advocate for anything that is unlawful or, for that matter, isn't moral. You have got to follow the law, and in order to do that, you have to know what the law is, and doing that requires either doing your own research or listen to programs like this that tell you what the law is credibly and give you resources where to look. The resources I'm using on this are A, the President's Executive Order, and B, an article from The Trace, which you can find at thetrace.org, and you can look it up yourself. Do the research. Don't believe it because Charles says it. Believe it because it's so. And you can figure that out for yourself. I want to encourage you to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.